97.5 The Fanatic.
Feliz Navidad.
All right, welcome back to the show. 302 here at 97.5 The Fanatic. Boy, this show has just flown by. 302, we're here till 4 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking Eagles and Redskins football. What else? Three games left in the season. Birds are 6-7. Looking forward to the matchup with Dallas next week at home at the Link. Of course, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. They still have a game in Washington tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Dallas hosting the Rams. The Rams are hot. They're 8-5 right now. Dallas has lost 3 straight. Before the Eagles beat the Giants, they had lost 3 straight. But a must-win game for the Birds, and they came up huge. They came up huge against the Giants late. Of course, if Dallas loses tomorrow, they will have lost 4 in a row, and the Eagles win. That puts the Eagles a game ahead of Dallas heading into that game. Of course, if they lose to Dallas in that game, then Dallas will have the tiebreaker because they will have won both games head-to-head. So not necessarily a must-win game for Dallas tomorrow. But a caller thought that L.A. was going to wipe the floor with Dallas tomorrow. I actually like Dallas as a point-and-a-half dog over the Rams. I think it's time that they right that ship. They have too much talent to lose 4 straight and, you know, kind of wither away in this who-wants-to-win-it-less race for the division title in the NFC East, Eagles or Cowboys. But I'm looking forward to it. I really am. And listen, it's football. It's something to talk about. Yes, I know it's a laughingstock division. I get all that. When ESPN, every morning on that show, Get Up, they show the division leaders, the wild card leaders, and who's still in it. And then you see the Eagles are still in it, 6-7. And you see on the left, you see that Dallas is leading the NFC East at 6-7. It's a debacle. But it's our debacle. And they're in the mix of it. And the Eagles were out of it last year, it seemed, at 6-7. 6-7. Did I say 6-7? 6-7 last year. Same as they are this year. They went on to win 3 straight, won a game in Chicago, and had a 14-point lead in the divisional round at New Orleans. Of course, they don't have Nick Foles, and they don't have the receivers they had last year, and they are depleted, certainly from an offensive standpoint. So it could be a tough watch tomorrow, but certainly a must-watch. And I don't know if it's a must-win game for the Eagles. Probably not. Last week's was against the Giants. They are 4-0 this year, I believe, in must-win games. So they have risen to the occasion at times. We'll see if they can make it to the finish line. I even think if they beat Dallas, it's going to be a white-knuckler against the Giants. Last game of the year at the Meadowlands. Maybe Eli's last game as a Giant. I can see... And I'm not kidding, and I hate to sound pessimistic, but I can see the Eagles beating Dallas, having to close out the season with a win over the Giants to take the NFC East and laying an egg in the Meadowlands against Eli, his last stand for the Giants. I can see that happening. That would not shock me. Losing the other night would not have shocked me. Nothing shocks me with this team. Losing to the Dolphins didn't shock me. Again, I give a lot more credit to the Dolphins than most people do. I thought they balled out, but if you have watched this team play week in and week out this year, it should not shock you that they could lose to anybody. And I won't say that they can beat anybody, but there have been some games where they needed to win at Green Bay and at Buffalo, where they have pulled out victories, and they pulled out one late against the Giants last week in order to keep them in the playoff race. Steve Callis coming up in the next 20 minutes. Right now, let's go to Rick on a cell. You're on 97.5. What's up, Rick?
It's Vic, man.
Oh, hey, Vic. What's up, pal?
Long time no here, brother. I always enjoy listening to you, brother. You're one of the most sensible, balanced brothers on sports radio.
I appreciate that, Vic. Thank you.
Seriously, man. Listen, your record is what it says it is, right? So it's reality for me. I'm trying to keep expectations low. I've watched some bad football this year, that Atlanta game, the Miami
bad.
Game.
Oh, it's bad.
It's horrible. So as a sports fan, I'm trying to just... try to stay positive. I tell you what, you beat Dallas and go to the playoffs. That kind of changes something. But really, to be honest with you, I'm rooting for Carson Wentz from the standpoint of getting the monkey off his back. Beat Dallas, get us in a playoff game. Because, you know, you got to be thinking, you know, all the pressure, he's got a new contract, and he might not feel it. He might feel it, but it would go a long way for him to be able to lead his team into a playoff game. And so finally get all the Foles talk, which I think is crazy still now. I mean, even though we're late into this season. I mean, I'm rooting for him. I can't help but root for him. Listen, you paid him all that money. He's going to be around for a while. So you want to see him do some productive. I think these guys off the practice squad, I think they're playing for him. And Boston Scott was sure a spark. But listen, man, it was the Giants. That defensive back for the Giants is clueless. And so you got to be thinking maybe Redskins are a tad bit better, even though their record doesn't say it. But listen, you keep your expectations low. You watch the game. Take everything with a grain of salt. That way you don't get hypertension like me and have to turn off the game. Because, dude, I mean, it's been rough this year watching these guys. I'm a diehard, but sometimes you die hard, right? Watch them.
Yeah, you might die hard tomorrow. Vic, it's going to be a rough watch tomorrow. It's going to be a rough watch.
It is, man. It's going to be. But you know what? Maybe we get to see Carson pull some magic. You never know, man.
You never know.
But, you know, hey, listen, you are still 6-7, right? Your record is what it says it is, but you hope. And you know, as a fan, you root. But, I mean, you got to be practical, too. People got us going to the Super Bowl now. I listened to the last couple of calls. Like, yeah. I'm like, dude, seriously, calm down. It's okay. Take one game at a time. You're rooting for the team. But maybe you could talk about this. Are we going to get some weapons next year or what? Because half these guys will be gone anyway. But listen, man, have a great show.
Hey, Vic.
God bless you, brother.
I appreciate it, man. You too. Happy holidays to you, my friend. Who knows what they're going to get next year. We'll see how they do in the draft. There's a lot of young, studly wide receivers out there. Of course, the Eagles seem to never find the ones that end up being very productive in the National Football League. Let's go to Damon in Center City. You're on 97.5. The Fanatic. What's up, Damon? Damon, you there, bro? No Damon? Let's go to Drew in Westchester. You're on 97.5. The Fanatic. What's up, Drew?
Hey, what's going on, big dog?
All right, man. How you doing, pal?
I'm good, buddy. It's been a while. So, about the Eagles game tomorrow. I mean, I really think, I'm with you, man. I mean, it could be anything, you know. I mean, teams are going to want to come out and play spoiler. So I think the Redskins, you know, I mean, I'm not going to hold anything past them to think that they're not going to come out and really try to and do something versus the Eagles. They're not just going to roll over for us.
I agree. It's not. I don't think it's going to be an easy game tomorrow.
No, by any means, I don't think so either. I mean, the one thing we do have going for us is that, you know, their quarterback is, you know, their quarterback. So luckily, hopefully our defense can pick it up like they did, you know, those games versus Brady and Russell and play like they did, you know, those games and hold this team to, you know, under, you know, 17 points or so. And, you know, and hopefully our offense can score, you know, at least 20, 24 or something and win the game, you know, maybe 24-17 or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. You know, the Redskins have won two of the last three. You know, they beat the Lions at home. They went into Carolina. They won that game. They lost to the Packers in Green Bay by 5. And here we are tomorrow. I mean, they've been hanging.
They hung with Green Bay. They hung with Green Bay and they only lost by 5 to Green Bay. So, it's going to be a challenge. And, I think the whole season, you know, going forward, I mean, I just hope we're not everyone's just not overlooking this game thinking, you know, okay, Dallas is our Super Bowl this year, really, where, you know, we still got this game to play.
Still got a game to go before we get there. Drew, I appreciate the phone call, my friend. Yeah. The Eagles should not be overlooking anybody, okay? They have a game to play at Washington, and then we'll talk Dallas. But this team, again, they've won 2 of 3. They beat the Lions. Turned out, you know, it looked like they were going to be a decent team when they beat the Eagles here in early September. Beat them by 3. Went into Carolina. Won by 8 over the Panthers. A game on the road. It's tough to win on the road. And then they just lost to the Packers by 5 in Green Bay, all right? So, you know, I wouldn't put anything past the Redskins. And with the Eagles, their offensive lineup, the way it's constructed, and what we saw last week in most of the Giants game, I think it could be, they could possibly be in for a long day. I still think they'll win, but I think it's going to be a tough watch. All right, as promised, on the Comcast Business Outline, my podcast partner, he is Steve Callis from Callis Remarks with myself and Steve. Steve, how are you, my friend?
Joe Stazak, the man, the myth, the legend. This is a true story. Driving rainstorm in New York yesterday. My boss, Janelle, who you know, very smart, very cool, has a big meeting in New York. We go to a Manhattan restaurant to have dinner afterwards. Walk into a place called Pulpette on 71st and Columbus. It's packed, driving rainstorm, L-shaped bar. We sit at the bar and have dinner. We're right near the two parts of the L. On the other side are a bunch of people who grew up in South Jersey.
All right, yeah.
And they're going, when my boss hears this, she goes, well, you know, this is Steve Callis. He's my sports editor. You know, he does a podcast with Joe Stazak, 97.5 The Fanatic. Every once in a while he goes on, actually on 97 The Fanatic, ESPN Radio in Philly. And the guy, Rich, next to me goes, I know Joe Stazak. He's good. He's real good. And I look at the guy like, is this a Joe Stazak plant in New York? And he goes, another guy's there going, didn't he used to be on TV? And I'm like, yeah, he used to be on TV. He's really good. He knows his stuff. He's a walking history book. So we sit there for like 2 hours and talk to Rich and his lovely wife. And Rich is telling me he's an Eagles fan forever. He's from South Jersey, living in New York now, still an Eagles fan. Too many injuries, not enough big plays, should be winning more games. And then he goes, I even got into hockey when Eric Lindros came to Philly. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So we sit there for 2 hours. By the end of the night, Rich is buying us dessert martinis. I don't even know what they are, Joe, but they
nice
like dessert. Laura, the bartender there, was great. So if you're in New York or anybody, they should go to Pulpet 71st in Columbus. I'd never been there before. A little gem in the middle of Manhattan. And I think next week I'm going to drive up to Boston, walk into an Italian restaurant, say Joe Stazak, and, you know, see what happens.
See if you get a seat by the window. That's too funny. Those guys are on my payroll, by the way, Steve. But I appreciate
it. That's a true story. You can't make that up.
Oh, that's funny, man. I appreciate it, brother. All right, well, here we are. We're at, game 14, Eagles and Skins. You saw how they eked one out against the Giants. They have practice squad guys left and right playing tomorrow. Robert Davis, his new cat, who ran a 4.44 at one point in his life somewhere out there. What do you make of tomorrow's game? I mean, this is setting up to be a showdown like we talked about a long time ago on our podcast, December 22nd, Eagles and Dallas. Yeah. But both teams have to do their part tomorrow. Can the Eagles get it done at Washington?
Well, I think the Eagles were lucky to play the Giants last week, and I think the Eagles are lucky to be playing Washington tomorrow. I mean, you know, once upon a time, you know this, Joe, you were 6-7. It was like, oh, can we be 8-8 this year, and maybe we can do better next year? But with the new, in all sports, wild cards, everybody makes the playoffs. You can win the, somebody didn't, Denver or somebody win at 7-9 once they won. You know, to me, it's ridiculous, but here we are, and I do think they beat Washington. I don't know how they beat Dallas, except Dallas. You know, I've heard all the comments about dysfunctional, and it's all true. I would say Dallas is the most underachieving team in the history of sports for, like, the last 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's incredible how they managed to lose with how good they are. And, you know, Jerry Jones will tell you about all the great draft picks that he's made over the years, more all pros than anybody. But they have no chemistry. I understand the coach is a big problem, but they have no chemistry and no ability to, like, win big games. It's really incredible. So I think they do win tomorrow. I disagree with you. I think they beat the Giants on the last day of the year. I mean, I don't even know what it matters anymore for the Giants. I'll say it again. They were lucky to be playing the Giants last week because I don't know how many teams in the league they would have beat last week given where they were. But again, they were the Giants. You know, you got to give Carson Wentz a little Joe Stazak clutch gene credit, not once but twice, for touchdowns, not field goals.
Right.
But I do think I think Washington is like always waving the white flag. You know, they need a new owner, not a new coach. I think you said they had nine coaches, or Les said they had nine coaches.
Twenty years under Dan Snyder.
So, you know, sometimes you got to look in the mirror, it seems to me. But I think they do get the job against Washington tomorrow, but I'm not sure how I see them beating Dallas. And remember, I'm the one who thought they could go to Dallas and beat Dallas, and they lost, what, 38-10 or whatever they lost by.
Sure.
It was embarrassing. But it's what you said, still in the hunt. They're in the hunt, only not for a wild card, of course, but for the NFC East, so they still have a chance. And, you know, those are the rules. You just show up and play your schedule based on the rules. But I'll say it again, years and years ago, before all these wild cards and divisions and everybody makes the playoffs, they're a mediocre team. Dallas is a mediocre team. You are what your record says you are. So I still think they can get there, but it's really now a function of schedule. But they have to beat Dallas, and that's going to be very hard.
There is a number, and I did some research on this before the show, Steve, and I talked about how many times Carson Wentz throws the ball. Because around this town, everyone's up in arms if they don't run the ball 25, 28 times a game. And there's some credence to that. You know, I crunched the numbers today. When he throws the ball 40 times or more, I'm talking about Carson Wentz, this year the Eagles are 1-5, and over his career, they're 3-14. Now, we know Doug Peterson likes to get away from the run game when it's not working. He likes his shiny toy in Carson Wentz. He thinks he's got an elite franchise guy there. He wants to use him. But they don't run the ball all that much. And now they're without Jordan Howard. So how much of a problem is that now with Carson Wentz? Probably, I mean, he threw 50 times against the Giants, and that's not a recipe for winning that often. How do you think it's going to affect this team tomorrow?
Well, the only thing I could say is they threw it 50 times last week and won, even though it was against the Giants. But the problem is, well, not only Howard, they have no Lane Johnson. Their offensive line isn't what it was. You know the historical record with and without Lane Johnson. That's like one of the scariest in football.
Yeah.
You'd think he's the MVP. And some people would argue a couple of years ago, right, that he was the MVP.
Yeah.
The year before their
his rookie year.
Season,
yeah.
And they were like great with him and horrific without him. So that's a big problem. I don't know if they can run the ball, but they might have to throw it. But I'll say it again. They were lucky to be playing the Giants last week. I think they're lucky to be playing Washington this week. And frankly, I'd be shocked if he doesn't throw it over 30 times, because I just don't think they're going to be able to generate the run game that you'd like them to have. And you can put a lot of this on injuries. But again, it wasn't like they were good before the injuries. And that's a problem. But I think they still have... The reason we liked them 4 or 5 weeks ago was what? It was really the schedule. It wasn't some incredible stream of play that was going to come on to put them on a 5-game winning streak. It was just the schedule. And don't forget, Dallas has a tough schedule. They can lose. You know, I mean, I like the Rams. I know you had a guy who said they're going to kill them, but the Rams are a Jekyll and Hyde team this year as well. They're not what they were last year. But I think they can certainly beat Dallas. And if it goes bad down there in Dallas early, it goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming back. They're just not that, call them what you want, dysfunctional, underachieving, mediocre. And then you look at the guys they have and you just shake your head. But that's what Dallas is. So I still think the Eagles, I think they'll beat the Giants in their third game from now, and they'll win tomorrow. I just don't know if they can beat Dallas, because I think the talent level, given all the injuries for the Eagles, is just awful far apart. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it next week, but got to get by this week first, but I think they can and will beat Washington.
Well, the Skins aren't that good. We know that, although they have won 2 of 3, but you still have to go out and win the game, and we saw how they played against the Giants for 2.5 quarters. How do they win this game tomorrow?
Grind it out. Carson Wentz. Maybe you said, you know, take the, you know, let Carson Wentz be Carson Wentz. Maybe he has to run a few times now. Maybe he should look to get out of the pocket. Maybe he should look to make something happen. I don't think he's going to have a lot of time. He might be getting out of the pocket because he has no choice.
Right.
But I wouldn't put it past him to bring back some of that athleticism, because you're right. Who's going to do it? Who are these guys? And, of course, you always come back to the hero last week, Zach Ertz, with the 2 late TD catches. And you're right, I still have no idea how he got so wide open. It's, like, scary to watch the replay of that play. It's like a street football game where everybody forgot to look at Zach Ertz. Never mind, pick him up. But he is the one, you know, he is the one guy. And if Washington has any sense, they'll double-team him the whole game, because that's what they should do. And then what are the Eagles going to do? But I think it lands on Carson Wentz's shoulders again. You know, he's been sub 500 since his what could have been MVP year. It's been disappointing. The numbers are the numbers. You know, everybody's got good numbers now if you're a quarterback. Very few quarterbacks don't have good numbers, because it's the new world in football the last 5-10 years. But I think it's all on Carson Wentz's shoulders, and I think he's going to have to make some things happen on the run, because I just don't think he's going to have a lot of time.
All right, switching gears, Steve. We have Steve Callis on the Comcast Business Hotline. Last question before I let you go. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this in terms of the 76ers. You know, Shaquille O'Neal, Charles Barkley. We talked about that a lot this week. They had comments on TNT about Joel Embiid and Jokic when he played against Denver. He only had 22 points, and he needs to do this, that, and the other thing. And they were pretty critical of Embiid, and Embiid kind of, you know, took it in stride and said, yeah, they're probably right. I need to be tougher. I need to impose my will. I need to do some more things. Since then, he had a 38-point game and a 24-point game, another win last night against New Orleans. What were your thoughts on those comments and how Embiid has responded to them?
Well, I got a few thoughts. First of all, I'm sure there were days when you watched Shaq play or Charles Barkley play, and they just didn't quite have that, and you could have said the same thing about them, I'm sure. Don't tell me they brought it every night for 80 games every year for the whole careers. That's ridiculous. Having said that, I think they're right, but here's the problem I see with Embiid. Why do you need these guys to say something to get you motivated? The real super duper stars. You think anybody had to tell Michael Jordan, oh, Michael, you know, I think you better pick it up a little, or pick any one of those, you know, Kobe, pick any one of those guys, Oscar, because you know I'm going to give you an Oscar stat at some point. But any one of those guys, you think they had to hear criticism from other people to make them, oh, yeah, they're right, I'm going to play harder? No. You got to show up every day. You know, I know Embiid is like, he does a lot of commercials, he does a lot of social media, he likes to be a fun guy, blah, blah, blah. But if you want to be the best player, to me, you got to forget all that and have a little chip on your shoulder and play hard every day. You don't need someone. You need someone to tell you to prepare for your show, Joe. You need someone to get on your case to make you, what, try harder? Look, the guy's a tremendous talent. He's already a superstar. He could loaf and be a borderline superstar. And what they were saying is right. But having said that, you shouldn't have to have guys, even superstar Hall of Famers like those guys, say to you, oh, yeah, I think, you know, he's not dominant. He should really blah, 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 blah. And don't forget, those guys played in a different era. It's hard. He is dominant, but it's hard to really run your entire game plan through a center in today's NBA because you got to be throwing it out for threes, because on those days when they're shooting threes really well and you're not, you're going to lose. I don't care what the guy does 5 feet from the basket. So it's a totally different game. But I think I'm most disappointed to hear that Embiid reacts to this stuff as opposed to having it within himself.
Mm-hmm.
Again, go ask guys like Kobe and Jordan. Did you ever hear from outside people and they made you play harder? I assume they just break out laughing. So I think it's still, he's still got to mature. He still should stop with all the histrionics and stuff, but that's just me. You know, I'm an old school guy, but look, he's a great player who could be greater. There's no doubt about it. And maybe this will get him, light him up a little, and maybe it'll be sustained through a whole season and the playoffs. But I'll say it again, the notion that people go 110% for 82 games in the modern NBA, I just don't believe that. And, you know, look at load management, for example.
No, you're totally right, my friend. But they are good at home, 14-0 at home. We'll see if Embiid can, I guess, continue to thrive off the outside criticism he's gotten from two Hall of Famers. Steve, you are my Hall of Famer, my friend. Tell everyone in the Upper West Side I said hello, and I'll catch him at some point, and we'll talk to you soon, man. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games. I'll be texting you during the game tomorrow.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
You too, Steve. Thanks, buddy. Steve Callison, the Comcast Business Hotline. All right, hang in there, Damon, Pete. We got a couple open phone lines right now. Had a caller on. He dropped off. He said he's rooting for the Eagles to lose. Are you rooting for the Eagles to lose for maybe some draft status? If you are, I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, you know, I think the difference is nominal at this point. So I'm not against tanking if tanking will help. But at this point, I'm all in. And I want to know if you're all in tomorrow, because the Eagles have a chance to set up a very dramatic game with the Dallas Cowboys next week here at the Link for a chance to win the NFC East. I'm Joe Stajak here to 4 o'clock, 610-632-0975. We're coming right back. 97.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Fanatic.
Third down and 13. A little pressure, they pick it up. Quick strike, and in keeping his balance is Slayton, and he takes it in. How's that feel, Eli Manning? 35-yard touchdown to Slayton on third and 13.
How about that, Darius Slayton, the rookie? I mean, we don't have a rookie like that, huh? Two touchdowns in the first half from old man Eli. Putting the Giants up 17-3 at the end of the half. But fortunately, the Eagles bounce back win the game. Two touchdowns by Zach Ertz. The Eagles' response to Darius Slayton. And, of course, J.J. Arcega-White had a big catch in that fourth down drive, fourth quarter drive, I should say, over the shoulder, a la Alshon Jeffrey from Nick Foles in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52. Kept it alive. Greg Ward, a big catch at the two-yard line, and a big fourth down conversion from Wentz on that fourth quarter drive. The sneak never fails. Don't know why they don't do it more often, but anyway. So the Eagles are 6-7. Dallas 6-7. Dallas plays the Rams tomorrow at home. 1.5 point dogs. Eagles a 6-point favorite over the Redskins. How does Vegas still keep giving out the Eagles, laying 6 points, laying 7 points, laying 9 points to the Giants? It's ridiculous. I mean, they may win and cover tomorrow, but I wouldn't give 6 points to anybody if I'm the Eagles. Are you kidding me? They can't score. They cannot score. I do not guarantee a Giants win at the end of the season if they beat Dallas. I'm saying I would not be shocked. I could see that happening. I could see the Eagles knocking off Dallas in one of the great all-time great dramatic showdowns with the Cowboys for NFC Eastern Division primacy, and then I can see them tagging the last game of the season. This would be a season where that would be fitting. That would be completely fitting because they're not a playoff team. Let's talk brass tacks. They're not a playoff team. They're just not. They may end up as a playoff team, but, you know, metaphorically, they're not a playoff team. Come on. So it would not, let me put it this way. If fate would have them losing to the Giants after they beat Dallas, it would almost be fitting. It would almost be fitting that they do not make the postseason. Now, Dallas, they're just as much of a mess, if not more, because they have more talent. They should be winning ball games. Getting smoked by Josh Allen on national TV on Thanksgiving is a complete embarrassment. Complete embarrassment. They've been an embarrassment. They lost to the Jets this year when the Jets were bad. I mean, the Jets are bad when they were worse. So, I mean, Dallas has their problems as well. Although I do think they beat the Rams, even though the Rams are coming in hot, I think Dallas wins tomorrow. I think the Eagles win tomorrow, setting up that showdown next week at the Link, 425, Eagles and Boys. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Pete in Princeton. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Pete?
What's up, Joe? How are you?
How you doing, bud?
Always a pleasure.
You too, pal.
I got a couple facts for you and a couple of thoughts here. Number one, I think Doug Peterson's best strength is he knows how to call plays for when his quarterback is a backup, but I also think a big strength, if you look back on his record, he's great at calling plays when the other team has their backup quarterback in. He's more aggressive. He goes for it on fourth down. He's a little more freewheeling with his play calling, and I think you're going to see that tomorrow. The one thing I'll disagree with, I think the Eagles win by 21 points tomorrow. I just think because of the other team's quarterback, not because of anything we do. That's just my opinion.
Okay.
So watch for that. The second thing is, I've been hearing all year about dropped passes. Okay? All you have to do is go to NFL.com. Eagles are ninth in dropped passes. Guess who's seventh and eighth? The Cowboys and the Saints. The Bills and Patriots are second and third. I don't hear those teams talking about dropped passes. You're going to have four playoff teams with more drop passes than the Eagles, yet the Eagles' season is hanging because we can't catch the football.
Well, I never blamed anything on drop passes. That happens all the time. I don't blame that Atlanta game on drop passes. They still had an opportunity to win that game, and they didn't do it.
Well, 100%. So I think tomorrow is a Doug game, how he calls. Watch how he calls plays in the middle of the field. Third and two, he takes a shot. First and, you know, it's because his play calling will look completely different tomorrow because he knows, hey, if we go for it on downs at the 40-yard line, let's get Haskins go down the field on us. That's what I think his attitude is. And I think when he did that in the fourth quarter with Eli, I thought you saw the Eagles offense, click a little bit better. So just watch for that tomorrow, Joe. Only a pleasure.
You too, Pete. I appreciate it, man. Happy holidays. Interesting stuff. I get what he's saying now. I wasn't sure what he was saying exactly, but when he has zero confidence in the other quarterback he's facing, he'll take more chances, is what he's basically saying. Eli did nothing in the second half last week. I think he had 24 yards, 50 yards total, did the Giants. And give credit to Jim Schwartz and his defense. I mean, you're down 14 points. You gotta make up those points offensively while keeping the other team at bay. And they did. They shut out the Giants. Not only did they shut them out badly. 50 yards and a half, really? I mean, Eli was lighting it up in the first half. And, you know, the defensive backs, you know, were horrible. Letting Slayton get by on that bomb for the second touchdown was ridiculous. But that happens. It happens to this team quite frequently. But in the second half, I got to give them credit. They shut them down. And Eli's still a very formidable quarterback, I think. I don't know if Daniel Jones gives him a better shot of winning. You know, I'll roll the bones on Eli in a game like that. But the defense shut him down and gave the Eagles enough chances to come back and win that football game. They had so many chances because the Giants could do nothing. They could do zero. And what Pete's saying is that if you see the backup quarterback in, or even Eli, who I guess he's technically the backup quarterback, and he's doing nothing, you can take more chances in the middle of the field. And I think he means like in the middle of the field from like the 35 to the 35. So, you know, we shall see. Doug takes a lot of chances anyway. He considers fourth down just almost a regular down, which I kind of like in a way, but there's a difference between calculated risk and stupidity, and I've seen him do some stupid things over calculated risks. There is a time to punt on fourth down. I'm not saying that, but he tends to sometimes, I think, take too many chances and rely on analytics a little too much on fourth down. Again, I'm all on board with aggressive football play and aggressive play calling. And I always thought the fourth down should not be automatically used as a punting down. And he doesn't use it as a punting down automatically. But there are sometimes he chases points, you know, with his conversions or his two-point attempts at times when he should just take the one. He does some risky things, which I like. I like his aggressiveness, but again, there's a difference between being aggressive and being stupid. Damon in Center City on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Damon?
Hey, I'd like to believe that the same Eagles that beat the Packers and the Bills are going to show up tomorrow, but you know, we have no idea what team is going to show up. It could be the Eagles that lost to the Dolphins and almost lost to the Giants. And I'm all in, but everybody kind of knows that the wide receiver position is probably the biggest weakness on offense. And what I don't get is if Antonio Brown, probably the best wide receiver hanging out there, is available, why the Eagles are not going after him. So I'm going to be quiet and let you guys.
Well, he's not really available. I mean, if they pick him up, he'll be suspended almost immediately. He's under investigation, and the league hasn't really done anything about that yet, but there's no way the league's going to let him play with this thing hanging over him, this rape assault charge.
Yeah, but we don't know that.
We don't know what.
Because we've been talking about the Patriots picking him up as late as...
That was before this happened, the rape assault.
As late as last week.
Who, the Patriots?
Yes.
The Patriots aren't picking up Antonio Brown.
No, they said they're not going to pick him up, but there was talk about them picking him up because they have a weakness at wide receiver just like we do. So, but they decided not to go for him. So the question I have is, why aren't we going for him?
Well, just like I said, he'll be on the exempt list as soon as he's picked up. There's no shot anyone's picking him, or someone would have taken a shot at him. Don't you think someone could use a guy like Antonio Brown?
Well, I'd like to believe somebody would have taken a shot at Antonio Brown, just like I'd like to believe somebody would have taken a shot at Kaepernick, but it hasn't happened. So it seems to me he's just as blackballed as anybody else.
Well,
with the need so high at wide receiver for the Eagles, you know, I would think that they would have given him a look like 2, 3, 4 games ago.
Well, if they were going to give him a look, it would have been way earlier in the season. Damon, I appreciate it. Right when he was getting cut by the Raiders, they would have given him a look. But that was a long time ago. A lot of things have happened since. And it's not like he's blackballed. I think the caller just said he was blackballed like Colin Kaepernick. That's two completely different stories from what Antonio Brown is being accused of and what Kaepernick, you know, did in his situation and how that's all played out. 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stajak. One more segment to go here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I'm the Fanatic. 7-5, the Fanatic.
Second and goal. Wentz to the end zone, wide open. They did it. Zach Ertz, eat that W, Philly.
Still love listening to that. Never gets old. Live call of a game-winning touchdown in overtime. How Zach Ertz does not get covered is beyond me, but he did have 9 catches. Big night for Zach Ertz. 9 catches, 91 yards, 2 touchdowns. His long was 30 yards. He was targeted 13 times. Wentz threw the ball 50 times, 33 of 50, 325, 2 touchdowns, was sacked 3 times, had a quarterback rating of 97.5. He's got to be big tomorrow. And he may have to throw the ball 50 times again, which does not bode well for him statistically. Again, he's 3-14 in his career lifetime when he throws the ball 40 times or more, and just 1-5 this year when he does the same. They do not have much of a running game. We'll see what Boston Scott can do. See, Boston Scott isn't necessarily between the tackles kind of guy, and they kind of tweaked the offense to have him run these short little pitch plays outside last weekend. It worked well. Yeah, I give credit to Mike Groh last week. You know, I've criticized him this year, but I thought his play calling, when he dumbed it down to a degree, that he called the comfort food, giving Carson Wentz comfort food, comfort plays that he's comfortable with, that could kind of give him some confidence, build some momentum, then they can go into the tempo offense, and it worked. You know, you start completing passes, you start getting into a rhythm, the offense is moving, the screen passes are working, and that's what he did. And I thought he did a nice job. I wouldn't call them trick plays, but I thought that they did a nice job, Doug Peterson and Mike Groh, with some of the play calling there on the fourth quarter, the late drive to tie the game, and, of course, the drive to win the whole thing in overtime. I thought, again, if we're going to criticize them, I'll give them credit where it's due, and I thought they did a nice job. Although coming out and ending up down 14 to the Giants at the half, not a great start. And the Eagles have done a lot of that this year. How many times have they trailed the game by 10 points or more? At least half of them. At least half of them. About 6 or 7 games they've been down by 10 points or more. You can't win like that. That's why Les Bowen, who was on a little while ago, talked about how it was kind of an early predictor of how the season would kind of play out. Game one, they come out slow. They're down 17-0 to the Skins. Case Keenum's tearing them apart. They could do nothing offensively. They're down at the half 20-7. So they had a 17-point deficit in that game. They have to come back with a couple big plays to Deshaun Jackson. And, you know, they don't have that anymore to do that. So they certainly, you know, can't afford to be down by 14 points again. I don't care who it is to. It is very difficult to come back from 10 to 14 points down in an NFL game, especially to do it 2 weeks in a row. You know, they kind of got away with one against the Giants. It's a very bad ball club, a bad secondary, and they made it work. But again, they were very fortunate to be playing the Giants and having that play out last week like it did. Hey, the Fanatic Holiday Wheel is back. This year we'll be spinning the Holiday Wheel 3 times a day with the morning show at 8 a.m., Anthony Gargano at 1 p.m., and Mike Missanelli's show at 5 p.m. You have a chance to win amazing prizes. Go to the contest page on 975thefanatic.com to register now for your chance to become a Holiday Wheel contestant. The wheel starts spinning this coming Monday, December 16th. That's in 2 days if you are keeping score at home. All right, let's go to David. He's been hanging around. He's from Roebling. You're on 97.5. What's up, David?
Hey, how are you? I'm a first-time caller, but I had to call.
I appreciate it, man. How you doing?
I'm all right, but I had to challenge you on something. What's I like you, so I'll make sure I'm as respectful as possible with my
That's
tone
okay,
with
man.
It.
I appreciate it.
I would like to challenge you and a gentleman on your perception on Joel Embiid. And as a teacher, I never tell my students their perception is wrong, so I don't do that to anyone, but I want to challenge it.
Okay.
Number one, I think that if anything, Joel should be commended for taking that criticism and accepting it and realizing that there was validity to it, and then coming out and showing that, okay, I got what you're saying. But two, I think that the gentleman was completely off when he says that the great players don't need to be given that kind of motivation. I have read numerous interviews of Phil Jackson challenging Jordan. I have read Kobe Bryant talk about how he was challenged by Phil Jackson. Charles Barkley was challenged by Moses Malone because he was told when he was fat and out of shape, he wouldn't be great. I bet you, as great as you are, is what you do. During your travels, there was probably some OG sports broadcaster that said, hey, kid, let me tell you something. Do this, that, and the third, and this is what's going to get you the level that you want to get. So I think it's unfair to the perspective that gentleman had about Joel Embiid, because I'm like, I work in television. I had an OG come and tell me, like, just like Kenny Smith said, Embiid, you got it. It's just that sometimes you don't know what's in your left pocket. And I feel like that's what that was an occasion of. And I think that he should be commended for the fact that instead of pouting or doing like Ben Simmons does and goes, I just ignore all of the outside chatter, he said, you know what? Maybe they're right. It takes a lot for a person to acknowledge that maybe they're wrong.
You know what?
Or is my perspective wrong?
No. See, there's validity to your perspective. First of all, he took it well. You know, sometimes you would expect someone to lash back on Twitter and whatnot, but he respects the guys. I mean, Barkley's a Hall of Famer. Shaq's a Hall of Famer. I think what Steve was saying earlier is that some guys are self-motivated, and Embiid isn't necessarily self-motivated, I guess, as he should be. But I think the way Kenny Smith talked about, he doesn't know what's in his left pocket, I think is a good way of putting it. But
I think real quick, just to add a point to it, but even with that, the reason why that narrative is not right, Embiid started playing ball at 16. There's no way you can tell me he ain't self-motivated. And he's already one of the top seven best players in the NBA in 10 years of playing ball from 16. So I think even with that, and my issues were more with that gentleman, not with you. So it's like to say that, like, no, Joel just doesn't know. And that to me is where one of the few knocks I have on Brett Brown is I think at times Brett Brown coaches his system more than the actual players. But a lot of things that we have issues with Embiid, if you really step back, and I've coached basketball, he just doesn't know. Like, he doesn't know. So I think that's really what it is. And sometimes you cannot know, even though you can want to do the best you may want to do, but sometimes you just may not know that you just need to look to the left.
All right.
So I think that was a little bit unfair of that gentleman to hit him with the old, no one has to tell Giannis to be great. Oh, yes, Mike Budenholzer did, because he said he challenged him. He said he came into camp. He said, and I challenged Giannis to do A, B, C, and D. So I think he was completely wrong about that.
All right, I appreciate it, Dave. Dave, I got to run. You're the last caller. Scott Lewis and Maurice, if you want to hang in there for Rob Motti, he's up next. I just think there's something a little off with Embiid in terms of what he can be versus what he is. And, Rob might be right. Listen, I mean, great players get challenged, obviously, by other, you know, great coaches, maybe some teammates. It just seems that, but those guys are already guys that are self-starters, I think. They're guys that are already, so willing to go out and die to be the best. I don't see that in Joel Embiid. I see something missing a little bit. The talent is there. The skill set is there. I just think he needs to understand how dominant he is or can be and kind of have that. I think he lacks a killer instinct, whereas the other guys we talked about, like Kobe and Mike, those guys already had the killer instinct. I think Joel needs to implore the killer instinct, and he doesn't have that right now. Hey, we got to run. I appreciate everyone for calling in, listening to the show. Steve Callis, Les Bowen, Marcus Hayes. We appreciate it. Rob Motti coming up next. Eagles and Skins tomorrow. I'll be back tomorrow night. No, I'm actually not on tomorrow night. All right, I'm not on. I'll see you next week. We'll talk about the Dallas game for all the shebang next week. And appreciate everyone once again for listening. Have a great time, everyone, tonight. Enjoy the game. Be safe. God bless. And I will talk to you next week. I'm out. Late.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.